We're finally here. It's time for the Summit for Religious Freedom, hosted by Americans United for the Separation of Church and State in Washington, D.C. this weekend from Saturday the 13th through Tuesday the 16th. And it's not too late to sign up. The entire Unreasonable team is here, ready to learn from distinguished voices in the church-state separation movement and to present our own workshop on grassroots organizing. Think of the SRF as a mecca for the secular world. Meet activists, religious and non-religious leaders, authors, attorneys, elected officials, and emerge with a renewed passion for change-making. Visit thesrf.org to register and use the promo code REASON for a discount. We all are eager to meet you this weekend at the Summit for Religious Freedom. Starting April 20th, we'll be launching our Live from SRF series featuring our conversations with the esteemed speakers of the summit. And just wait till you hear who's going to be on the show. Actually, we're in the midst of the church-state separation conference circuit right now. So very ironically, on Easter weekend, at the end of March, we visited the American Atheist Conference just down the street in our home city of Philadelphia. We conducted an interview before a live audience to be the first of a four-part series called Secular Ground Game, where we talk to activists in swing states about the challenges and triumphs enacting legislation and electing legislators that support the constitutionally mandated separation of church and state. Where better to start than in two of the most challenging states in the nation, Florida and Texas? So here's our conversation with Drs. Devin Graham, chair of American Atheist Florida Secular Advocacy Team, and Will Judy, founder of Secular Houston and a longtime friend of the pod, on today's special live recorded episode of Unreasonable. So the essence of Bennett's introduction is that Christina and I are focused on grassroots efforts, how we translate the good work of so many institutions and individuals into action items that our listeners, that our friends, that our followers can participate in their own way. So we're especially thrilled to chat with a couple of friends of ours. Dr. Devin Graham is a former evangelical Christian who has her PhD in toxicology from the University of Maryland, where she's an assistant professor at a medical school researching the development and treatment of neuropsychiatric disorders. Devin serves with American Atheists as assistant state director for Tallahassee and is the chair of the Florida Secular Advocacy Team. She was awarded American Atheist Rising Star Award in 2020 and is the Atheist Activist of the Year Award in 2021. Dr. Will Judy, a longtime friend of ours, is a board-certified family medicine doctor, noticing a pattern here, who practices urgent care full-time. He is a member of the board for Houston Oasis, which is a free thought organization, and Texas State Director for American Atheists. Will created his own group called Secular Houston, which seeks to collate the efforts of local secular groups while giving voice to secular politics at the local level. So my first question is, Christina, what the hell are we doing with our lives?
It's all the science here. We've got the science in the room.
Pretty amazing. You don't need a doctorate to do this, I promise you.
Well, so I'd like to lead with that. I'd love for you actually both to give us a chance, respectively, to walk us through your trajectory. You know, how did you come to activism and how your professional life might be conducive to activism or disruptive to activism or what? Devin, how about you?
Yeah. So I deconverted shortly after moving to Florida. Shocking, I know. In around 2016. And I just kind of meandered around aimlessly in the, you know, angry atheist stage. I still kind of am in that stage. But I wasn't until about 2019 when American Atheist, they sent a person around recruiting people. I think Will may have been recruited by the same person, maybe.
Probably.
And I just started working with American Atheist then, and how I got into activism, specifically, was I didn't have a group. And so with my background, I love community service. I love working with people. I wanted to do that kind of work, but I didn't have a group. And so I'm like, I live in the state capital of the craziest state in the union. Mm. I think there's probably something I can do from an advocacy standpoint. And I have I had never had interest in any of this type of stuff. But there was a protest put on by Equality Florida in front of what we would call a fancy hotel in Tallahassee. They were hosting an anti-LGBTQ Christian nationalist group. And of course, esteemed football coach Bobby Bowden and his wife were receiving an award that night. Mm. And so I just showed up and I talked and I was like, this is my first time ever doing this. And I know that there is a bill coming through in the upcoming session about moments of silence. And I wanted to do something about it, but I didn't know who to talk to. So I talked to an Equality Florida person who was there, and he's like, let me hook you up with with our public policy advocate, which is kind of like their head lobbyist. And to this day, John Harris Maurer, who I'm going to shout out, I love him. He is one of my closest friends. He's taught me everything I know. And I've just become addicted to the legislative process and testifying on behalf of non-religious folks like us. And yeah, as far as how this affects my job, technically I'm a state employee, so I have to be very careful in the state of Florida. But as a citizen, I do this as on my own personal time. So yeah, I try to keep those two extremely separated. Separation of church and state is kind of important, especially if you'd like to keep your job in Florida. So, so yeah.
And Will, how about you?
Similar journey. I became a real full-time physician in 2000, raised two girls, and just kind of fast forward. I watched the news. I was interested in politics. I voted every 2 years, but I never really got down ballot. I never really got into the weeds with policy and local government. But again, I voted every 2 years. And I have a vivid memory of voting for it was a primary, I believe, because there was a bunch of people on the ballot. And I just started voting just like, oh, I don't know. Randomly. I remember I was young, but I remember thinking I shouldn't be doing this. There's one candidate. His name is, he's still there, is Al Green. And I remember I was like going to vote for him just because of the name. And I was like, oh, whoa, I shouldn't do that. This is not good. So, but I was young. Fast forward many years, and the election of 2016 happened. And that's really what got me off the couch. Again, I watched the news, I get outraged, but I never really looked locally. After 2016, I said, I need to do more. And so I got off the couch and I kind of Googled, like, what can I do? I was looking at the U.S. U.S. House of Representatives district that I was in. I looked it up, and apparently it was in play. The Republicans won by less and less. I'm sorry, I'm from Houston, Texas, by the way. So the Republican won by less and less. He in this district was in play. So I kind of looked up, well, how can I help? Ended up meeting a Get Out the Vote group. That was specific for the district I was in, District 7. And that's where I started to meet people that were door knocking, learned what canvassing is, learned what a VDVR does, how to apply to be that, why it's so potent and important to do that. So that's when I got more involved in local politics, learning more and why it's so important. Coincidentally, that's when I stumbled, that same year, I stumbled into a secular group and I started doing more and more in that realm. And it's a kind of a convoluted story, but I started doing more and more in both worlds. And at a certain point, fast forward more years, I didn't have the energy or time to do both like I wanted. So I merged those two and I formed my group called Secular Houston, which merges secular thought with politics, local politics. We'll get into that later. My job, I'm a family medicine physician, now urgent care physician. And my job's cool. They don't care. It doesn't affect, I don't think patients Google me. I've never got one patient say, hey, you're that atheist director of American Atheist in Texas. And my picture's up there. I'm just like, but I don't bring it to work, but work's never brought it to me. So they're super cool. I'm fortunate in that way.
Do you think it's because of the region in Texas that you're in that you have that benefit?
Yes. It's a private company owned by a lady I went to residency with her actually.
Oh.
And she's great. She's okay. Liberal. She doesn't care. Just do your job and be a good person. And that's what I do. That's what I am.
Lovely.
I want to put a fine point on a shared experience that you've both described here, which is being normal people. Well, normal, very highly educated medical professionals, but normal people nonetheless, who got into organizing, all things considered, relatively recently and have made waves since. And have started your own things and this is something that we are trying to describe constantly to our listeners, that this work is not inaccessible, that grassroots organizing, grassroots activism is something that anyone can do. And I think it's safe to say, probably most of you in this room would agree that Texas and Florida are kind of national pain points for anybody with progressive ideology between Ron DeSantis and Greg Abbott and all of your U.S. senators, Rubio, Cruz, the whole nine yards. It's kind of a who's who of Christo-fascist nut jobs. So broadly speaking, what do you find motivates activists like you or with whom you work in otherwise, let's say, ideological depressing states?
What keeps us motivated, I guess, is just how these laws are beginning to affect more and more of us every single day. I think I said something last year on the stage, like, I don't know, the Christian nationalism is undergoing its death rattle right now. It's on the way out numbers wise, but it's a long ass death rattle, and it's killing people that I love and friends of mine, and it's affecting us in our daily lives. And I think that's what keeps me motivated, because I know that every bill that they put forth in the House and the Senate in Florida, it's going to pass. It's just, what can we do? But there are, I think, just, you know, saying what we need to say to get when these bills eventually are litigated, eventually, saying those things that matter to us that can be put on the record later on is important. I don't know. This is like a very, niche thing that we have to keep in mind whenever we're testifying. It's like, it doesn't end right there once the bill is voted on. It's always going to be litigated at some point. It gives me hope, doing things like that, like the fact that I have kids and I don't want them to have to deal with the crap that, you know, others are having to deal with. So that's for me. The progressives and the people who are on our side in the state of Florida, at least, are, I don't know, they're forged by fire. Like, they are badasses, and they're amazing, amazing people, and they should be on the national stage, but we don't want to lose them for Florida. Because, I mean, they face this shit every... I can swear, right?
Yes.
Oh, please.
Okay.
It's actually a requirement.
Okay, good. They face this shit on a day-in, day-out basis, and they should quite frankly have quit and, you know, worked for the private sector at this point. But they keep on doing it, and if they can do it, then I'm going to keep on doing this. And it's just, I don't know, it's a camaraderie, I don't know, we're gluttons for punishment, I guess.
Do you believe that this faction of people you're describing who are more motivated to do something about their terrible circumstances exceeds or outweighs or outnumbers the people who are just so beaten down by it?
Oh, God, I hope so. Otherwise, we're screwed. I know a lot of people who have left activism because they just couldn't deal with it. It's too much, and it's a shame when we lose those people. But I have hope in the younger generation as well. Please,
we share your hope and confidence, by the way.
But they're really amazing. The kids these days, they're actually really great. And I have hope that they are going to be able to pick up a little bit of the mantle that we have, and borne for a while. So yeah,
that's right, folks. Don't listen to the talking heads about Gen Z.
No, they're awesome. Bless them. Atheists, bless them.
And Will, how about in Texas? What's motivating your folks on the ground?
So I can mainly speak for what motivates me. And yeah, I've had to switch my mindset, because as a medical doctor, you kind of want good outcomes. Your mindset is, I need a good outcome every time. And I'm outcomes driven in my day job. But I learned fairly quickly when I started doing activism that in Texas and in Florida, if you're worried about outcomes, you're going to get disappointed. You're going to just get burned out and fall out pretty quickly. You'll be very disappointed. So I had to shift. And for me, I find joy in the struggle. First, I hate it when assholes win. That's keeps me going somewhat. And again, I'm very altruistic. I want to increase well-being, decrease suffering for as many people as possible. And within the secular world that I find myself in, I'm surrounded by these kind of people. I love it. I love our world. But so I love increasing well-being for as many people as possible. we all have a big list, 20 plus things we want to get better in society, LGBTQ stuff, repro rights, racial equity, all that stuff. And it feels good to put energy into making those things better in society. But again, I hate it when assholes win, and I find joy in the struggle. That's kind of where that shift happened. And it's maybe it was for my own survival. Maybe it's just kind of a surprise in my life, but the people you meet in the trenches, the camaraderie, as Devin said, I love it. It's really fulfilling to be elbow to elbow with fellow secular people, even in the interfaith things I've been doing lately in Houston. I'm totally surprised at how cool these Christians and Muslims and Hindus are. They're fighting for the same things that we are, even harder and longer than we have. Totally surprised me. And those are the surprises that kind of keep me going, the camaraderie. A friend of mine, Dr. Anthony Penn, big in the humanist world, he says at the end of his lecture, most of the end of his talks, because he says something very similar, but he puts it way better than I do. He says, imagine Sisyphus happy. Imagine Sisyphus rolling that rock up that mountain, and he's happy doing it. He finds joy in that struggle. I'm getting goosebumps just thinking about it, because I always do. And that's it. It's weird. It really is, but imagine Sisyphus happy.
It's quite profound, and it reminds me, Bennett introduced me as a musician. I teach a lot of violin students, and I am constantly trying to impart the value of effective practicing of an instrument that sounds absolutely terrible if you don't know what you're doing. Mm-hmm. But older students, adult students, have this wisdom for the long game. And hours and hours of bad sounds and frustrating attempts to play difficult music become sheer joy because they appreciate the value of what they're doing the long term. And this is something that famously the Christian right has done very well. They've played the long game. So it gives me great optimism to hear you speak about the joy that you derive from work that won't necessarily yield results immediately. Mm-hmm. I mean, I wonder if that's actually a ubiquitous phenomenon among activists or if this is more of a...
I don't think so. I think it's weird.
I was going to say, because I wish there were a way to... I'm sure you're doing this within your organizations to impart that wisdom.
Yes, and this has been my goal lately is to get on more... It's weird, but it helps. And I want people to know that it helps because the default is, I got to win back repro rights for women in Texas or Florida. Like, you're goals oriented. But again, you're going to kind of burn out. So I would love to be on all the shows saying, there's another option. If you find joy in the struggle, you'll last longer. It's more fulfilling day to day. And it is, yes, it's a long game as they have played.
Yeah.
So they had... 50 years they've been taking over the courts. They've been doing their work, and we're just starting. And I have a question about what it's like on the ground when you're working in areas where there are a lot of dominionist extremists and there are a lot of Christian nationalists. When you go out and you door knock and you go out and you have events, do you feel like you're under threat? What do you do? And how do you make sure that you're engaging with the public in a way mm-hmm. that keeps the people that you want to grow, to help grow your team, to keep them on your team? How do you make sure that you're doing the best you can to keep it positive for everyone?
Providing a safe space, you mean?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's important.
It really is. Whenever we have big bills coming up and we're busing people in, like other orgs, obviously atheist orgs aren't big enough to bus people in yet. We bus people in, we're getting there. We always provide like areas to, decompress. Like that was a really bad meeting we just had. Let's all talk about this. And, I think that's really important to let people know that this is personal. I don't know. I've been going back and forth about having people come testify because it's a demeaning, demoralizing experience. If you've ever done it, I love it. Actually,
we need folks who love it.
At least in Florida, I'm going to speak about the Florida process here because it's the only one I know. Tallahassee is far, far, far away from anywhere else in the state. So if you're coming from Miami to testify, you've spent 8 hours in the car already, or you've had to get a plane ticket. And then you get up there and they may give you 30 seconds. I've seen them give you 15 seconds to say what you mean. And sometimes they've cut off testimony entirely. So you've spent all that time. You get up there, you say your personal story, you're crying. They've started asking questions, like really, I don't know, demeaning questions sometimes of people that they want to, you know, make an example of. And so you've gone through that, and now you got to drive 8 hours back home or something. And it's awful. But I mean, I think that that kind of stuff really does make a difference. And I, for a while, I'm like, it doesn't make a difference. I can't tell anyone to come here and do this, because it's mentally not a good thing. But we've seen this past year. So Equality Florida is the largest LGBTQ civil rights group in the state. We had, last year was the worst year for legislation for LGBTQ, for LGBTQ plus folks. 22 bills, almost all of them passed. Mm. We had 22 bills again this year, all but one, only one passed. The rest were either neutralized or killed, because they bust people in. They took up time in committee meetings. People just showed up, and they personally, individually, on an individual level, they may have been through it all. But overall, it really did make a difference this past year. And so, I mean, yeah, I've had people show up on my doorstep before, because it's a sunshine state. Like, all the info's out there. You can find me or however you want to. But I personally don't feel, I don't know, I can kick anyone's ass.
Love it.
But yeah, I think it's more of a mental, we need to take care of each other emotionally if you do this work. So,
similar in Texas, Texas can be and probably will be hostile to what I'm trying to do. So far, we're small. We're just getting started. So I haven't had to deal with it, but I try to foresee any problems and try to be prepared for it. So safe space, absolutely. But at a certain point, as we do more work and we get more visibility, we're going to get the pushback from the Texas crazies out there. So, again, I don't know what can be done. I've started to ask questions, but yeah, safety is always one of the things I have in mind when I organize events.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it takes a certain degree of resiliency to be able to to do this work. At least the nature of the work that each of you does, and that we're doing as well in Pennsylvania. I was going to ask, and you've already, I think we all can take some guesses about your answers, but what you each respectively feel are the most effective mechanisms for change, and how you've integrated these mechanisms into the work that you do. So Devin, for example, you talk about legislative advocacy.
Yeah.
And you've already shared with us how mm-hmm. powerful that can be. I know that, Will, you're very involved in the door knocking sort of grassrootsy scene. Can you share with us how you've effectively taken your understanding mm-hmm. of a change theory mm-hmm. and implemented this passion into tangible action?
I don't think it's like a real action. It's kind of somewhat passive. It's just being consistent and showing up. When I first started doing this, I would go up to legislators like, hey, Devin Graham, I'm with American Atheist. And they would physically, mm-hmm. you know, back up like, what? No, I don't want anything to do with you. But I've shown up. I've supported their bills. I've been there. I just have been consistent. And they know that they can count on me to testify in the right direction, I guess. And I've been a gadfly, I guess is the word, is for those who don't think like us. But I mean, it's not really like a real action. I just kept on showing up, and that's all you have to do. Just normalize atheism. If we don't normalize the fact that 30% of Americans are non-religious, then what's the point, I guess? Just show up. Yeah. But just being there and letting people know that this is what I believe. And I know that there are people of faith here who also believe the same thing. We're all on the same side on this issue. So let's work together. Prove to be an ally. And that's the key.
I think it's cool that Devin's first intro into political stuff was the legislative avenue and invocations. And that's kind of her passion. Mine was get out the vote and switching my congressional district. And now my formula for change is endorsing candidates. So with Secular Houston, my candidate actually won, the Democrat won. So I got a taste of victory way back then, and I got hooked. I said, oh, wow. So some of the other my favorites back then lost. So I got a taste of defeat. But the main one, my district, we flipped. So again, I was hooked.
Fantastic.
So yeah, fast forward, I formed Secular Houston. And what we do is we send out questionnaires to everybody running. The ones that return, we're officially nonpartisan. So the candidates that return the questionnaires will figure out if they're worth our endorsement. The ones that are, we make an endorsement list and we tell anyone who will listen, hey, we did the work. These candidates align with our values, mainly separation of church and state, respect of science, being okay with non-belief. We did the work, fucking get them elected. And not just vote, but do something extra. Oh, what's the extra? Glad you asked. We have a whole list, of extra things you can pick from. Pick one, do the extra, and you can go to bed at night saying, I did the extra. I'm a blade of grass in the grassroots. I've done the work.
I think you're making up for all that Al Green chuckle. It's just like,
yeah, on the Instagram post, I have love and happiness. Is this mic on?
Yeah. Well, I can't emphasize enough the power of what you're describing. So Christina and I, among other things, we are the chair and vice chair, respectively, of the Secular Democrats of Pennsylvania. And Pennsylvania is much more purple than your states, but we had up until 2020, well, the outcome of the 2022 election cycle, a blue governor's seat and a red Senate and a red House. Mm-hmm. And at this point in 2022, after the fall of Roe, we were all freaked out that in the absence of a Democratic presence within the legislature, in Pennsylvania, the governor has no sway over a constitutional amendment. So had the red legislature, if unified, could have in two consecutive sessions passed a constitutional amendment that would have gone to the ballot. And then it would have been up to the voters who would have been strategically disinformed, underinformed, et cetera, disenfranchised. So there were, I don't have to tell all of you how much was at stake that year, but we, in our sort of ragtag capacity as organizers of this budding secular community in Pennsylvania, decided to endorse candidates. And one of our candidates we endorsed was Melissa Serrato, who now represents the 151st district up in Montgomery County, not so far from where we are now. We made a lot of phone calls for her, and she won by 63 votes. And so, I mean, that's, by the way, what I didn't mention is that it was her one seat that swayed the entire partisanship of the Pennsylvania House.
We are up by one.
One.
That's it. Just one. Nice. And elections are coming again this November. Every House rep is up again. So it's always tenuous and there's always work to do.
And a little bit of work goes such a long way. And endorsing a group of candidates. Hey, one of them actually pulled it off by a very narrow margin. I tell this story all the time. So Christina, I apologize, but I got a call from the AP about the work that we did because of this narrow win, this narrow majority that the Democrats took in the Pennsylvania House. And I made the stupid comment that I'm not saying that the Pennsylvania Secular Democrats flipped the Pennsylvania House, but I'm not saying we didn't. just to emphasize that this model is very powerful. Mm-hmm. You've mentioned a couple times now the stigma of secularism. And this is a bipartisan problem. Certainly in our capacity with the Secular Democrats of Pennsylvania, which by the way is not a subsidiary of the Pennsylvania Democratic Party. And we want to keep it that way because we have a degree of autonomy and because even this is a bipartisan issue. This negligence and even ire toward the atheist or non-religious community, mm-hmm. the secular community. We have people who show up to our meetings who are just so grateful to have found a haven, a place where they can be accepted and where people can have these conversations. How do each of you respectively in your organizations and the work that you, how do you conceive of conversations with people to normalize our movement and our belief system?
Normalizing is, like I said, it's just showing up and being out. If you're not out, then no one knows you're there. I remember the first time I testified, I was with my friend John Harris, and he was introducing me to other like progressive lobbyists. And he's like, this is Devin. We had to whisper because we were in a meeting. This is Devin Graham. She's with American Atheists. And he, but they didn't hear the American part, and they just heard, this is Devin. She's an atheist. And she goes,
Devin, the godless heathen.
And she goes, aren't we all? And I'm like, maybe, I don't know. I really hope so. But as far as like, I just, it's just being out. If you're not out, then no one knows it. You have to be out about it. I don't know how to make that any clearer. Just do it. Do it. It's okay. You're not going to die.
And Will, you're sending folks out on the ground to have conversations with voters. What's your take? How do you coach people to have these conversations?
We are not sending a lot of people out to talk with people in the Houston area. Not yet. We're not that big yet. What we are doing to normalize it is, again, we just exist. And we exist as a voting block that holds separation of church and state as the most important agenda item that we have. So we normalize it this way, that way. So we've been in existence since December 2021, so fairly new. But every election cycle, our endorsement list gets larger and larger. And some of these candidates win, some lose. But they all know that there is a group of people in the greater Houston area that hold separation of state important, and that are secular, hold secularism important. And these people candidates tend to be plugged in to more people in the political world. So we're a thing now in the greater Houston area. So secular Houston is a thing. Secularism is a thing. Separation of church and state is a thing because of the efforts that we are doing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah. And further, kind of a side adventure that we've had is a big interfaith push over the last year and some months. We are pushing to get at the table with interfaith groups, be involved with them, and they, all of them, have been smiled, open arms. Where have you been?
Yes.
Come in. And again, they usually have a good, robust social justice some committee doing terrific work. So we're slowly figuring out what we're going to do together, locking arms for common causes, but they know we exist, and vice versa. Secular people kind of know that they're kind of cool. So this is normalizing their relationship with belief groups and believers in the greater Houston area. Again, it's not going to be all of them. I totally understand that, but there exists, they welcome us and actually advocate for some of the same things we do. And that, I think, is going to have a huge impact in normalizing things going forward.
We need those allies.
And I think they welcome us, absolutely. They're some of our greatest allies, but the onus is upon us to reach out to them. Ah. I think that's the key there. There's a ton of interfaith groups, like the Florida Council of Churches is one of them, and it's a bunch of progressive faith leaders, and we all believe
it. But it's not what I'd think if I heard that name.
Exactly. It's not the Council of Catholic Bishops, I can tell you that. But the Florida Council of Churches, they are on the same side of every single issue, including the recent chaplaincy bill, which is the most, I've never seen so many black and white collars in one room.
Wow.
Siding with us. And it was so amazing.
That's wonderful.
But yeah.
If you're listening to this, what I'm hearing is like, you should actually reach out and seek out other interfaith groups and try to build a coalition.
Cause we still are the minority. I mean, maybe not in numbers, and it's a silent minority, whatever, but they have established groups. They have, why reinvent the freaking wheel? Just join up with them and be like, hey, I'm an atheist and we're all on the same side. I can say things that you probably can't say. And so we can, it's a symbiotic relationship, but the onus is upon us to go work with them. I do think that it's not everyone's cup of tea to, you know, take the lead on something like that, but just, It's not that bad. You'll live.
My word of advice for wherever you are in the country, is that don't go to Catholic churches. Go to more high yield, Google interfaith groups wherever you are. Mm-hmm. If there's one around, that's a terrific place to start. Google UU churches, Universalist churches. Yeah, they tend to have robust social justice committees.
And the atheist with church.
Spend so much time in church. It's weird.
My job. I'm a UU music director.
Start there, And that's where you're going to have the highest yield, whether it's at an individual level or with your secular group, if y'all are interested in doing that.
Mm-hmm. So I have a few questions about 2024 and what we're going to see. And this might get, so yes or no, first off, mm-hmm. at the top level, governor and Senate, is your state flippable?
No.
Devin, can you repeat that?
No. Maybe governor, but I don't think it.
Will, what have you got?
Governor's Texas. Governor's already been decided, so it's a hard no.
Okay.
Senator Ted Cruz is up this year, and it's unlikely the Democratic candidate is going to win.
Okay.
Possible, but I wouldn't put money on it.
All right. My follow-up question, because I want to make sure that people keep doing work on the ground, that they don't hear no and just turn away and bury their heads in the pillow and cry.
Sisyphus. Joyful yeah. Sisyphus.
Joyful Sisyphus. Exactly. What do you see as the greatest barrier to winning that seat? Is it a combination? Is it gerrymandering, ballot access? Is it turnout? Is it something I'm missing? I know voting rules in your states for registration can be a little wonky. Mm-hmm. Tell me what you see on the ground as what needs to be fixed over the course of the next 4 years to make these changes.
Gerrymandering hit us hard this last year. Florida was the only state that had the red wave where everyone else saw the blue wave. Like we actually got way redder. So gerrymandering really fucked us over, quite frankly. And also the Democratic Party pulled out, the National Democratic Party pulled out of Florida. That we got almost no funding from them whatsoever the past 10 years or so. And so they gave up on us. And that's why we went from a purple to a very red state. And we're hoping that we're finally getting people at the top that who are better, I guess, and can bring people, I don't know, organize better. But once that gets under control, I think we can potentially flip it. But we don't have, with gerrymandering, it's hard to vote. Voter registration is out of control. And money, all of the above.
In Texas, it's apathy. That's really the biggest barrier to what the problem we have in Texas is. The red caps are going to vote as they will, and they do get out to vote in Texas. And I'm not trying to change that. I'm not trying to convert them to our side. It's the apathy that is getting in the way. Texas is a non-voting state. It's always 48th, 49th, 50th in the nation as far as voter turnout. If voter turnout just went up 15%. We don't have a Ted Cruz, and we don't have heartbeat bills and all this stuff. So that is the greatest barrier that we have in Texas. And it's tough because it's two generations of your vote doesn't matter. It doesn't matter who you vote for. Oh, there's going to be Proud Boys at the polling stations yeah. with ARs. Any little speed bump that gets in the way of people getting out to vote, it works. And over the years, to their credit, it is wildly successful in Texas.
Okay.
Christina, share with us what we've been discussing internally about what it's like to register voters in Texas.
Oh yeah, Texas is a pain in the ass state to register to vote, and I'm sure you know this more than anybody. I had looked at it. It's like, okay, you need to print out mm-hmm. the application, you need to fill it out, there's no online voter registration form that you can just fill out and easily access. And this brings me to another question that is all along this topic, and that is snowbird voters. Pennsylvania is a state with a lot of snowbirders, people that either live half the year in Pennsylvania and half the year in Florida, or maybe they live half the year in Texas or Arizona. My question to you is, where is their vote more effective? Would you prefer them to register in Texas or register in Florida and be one of or talk about that. Tell me what you think, because I talk to snowbirders all the time and I'm not I want to tell them what the best thing they can do is. And now that I've got the two of you here, I need to learn from you.
The snowbirders that we have come across with don't like us. they're not the good snowbirders. I don't know if you ever heard of the Villages in Florida.
Oh, yeah.
that's a lot of snowbirders in there, too. I would rather them stay away. But if they are, you know,
my snowbirder friends are in Broward County, and they're all eager to vote in Broward. They're all big LGBTQ.
Okay,
positive.
Then they should.
They want to come and they want
those friends of yours, Chris.
Only nobody your else. Friends. Only your friends.
But I don't know. So I should tell them, go ahead, do it in Florida. Your vote is is going to be meaningful.
Yeah,
because that's where they're looking. Like, okay, they know Pennsylvania is a swing state. Mm-hmm. It's 2024. All this is an important year.
Yeah.
So it's hard to make sure that we're telling them. Giving them the best advice.
Yeah.
And it is a personal thing. Ultimately, I want them to do whatever they feel is best.
Yeah.
But giving them information they might not have is useful.
And for me, like everyone thinks national politics is the shit and I hate it.
Yep.
It doesn't, very little that happens at that level is going to affect
you.
This
is such an important point.
No. Very little is going to affect you in your daily life. Where it matters is state level and local level. And if you're not voting for those people, like, then kiss your democracy goodbye, because that's where we need those Broward County voters. Like, that can go either way sometimes. We need the people voting down ballot. Down ballot is so key, so key. Who cares who's the president anymore? Well, okay, maybe.
Wrong year to say that, but I know your point is well taken.
Yeah. Okay, next time.
So looking at voter turnout, right? We had I pulled it up the other day. It was 60% in 2016, 60% of people voted. And in 2018, it was 46%.
It was nationally.
Nationally. Okay. 46%. Mm-hmm. So when you think about those, like, that was the turnout is so low. It drives me. That's my bananas thing. It just drives the ice.
Yeah.
But, all right, I'll stop. Okay. School board and election board meetings. Mm-hmm. Do you send people? Do you have activists on the ground that you're working to send? Because as we talk about local elections, we talk about how these local things impact. And what I see happening in both Texas and Florida with school boards and with the election board meetings, it's just terrible for the people that are in that position. And I think that I imagine that if you're sitting on a school board, you would welcome assistance from any organization that would come in and defend and support the freedoms that they're trying to activate. So how are you doing any of that? Is that something that you want to do more of, or is it just like, no, it just,
I can't,
not yet.
Can't put that on my plate right now.
Okay.
It's too, like, I do have kids in public school, and Florida is the home of the founder for Moms for Liberty, Ms. Ménage à Trois herself.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Is she still heading that, or did her?
She's still on the school board.
Did they kick her husband off of that?
He resigned as the chair of the Florida Republican Party. So, yay.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's still happening. But I mean, I would love to be more involved in school board stuff. But right now, it's just me doing this. For whatever reason, my little local group, even though we're in the Capitol, does not want to be involved. It's bizarre to me.
Okay.
But I think it's, I don't know. I'm changing the topic now. But I think, like, getting people engaged in doing this is all about, like, education and just doing it. Like,
and meeting people where they are too. You know, I think it's actually quite profound that you wouldn't push people who are disinclined to do something beyond their comfort level. I mean, this is a problem. I'm guilty of this frequently because my passion is the power of in-person conversations and knocking doors. How many of you out there enjoy knocking doors for politics?
No.
I am not surprised that not a single one, wait, sort of, maybe half a hand in the middle of the room. Yeah, that's what I expected. That half a hand is more than I expected. You know, it's such important work, but it's even more important that organizers are cognizant of, and this is a lesson that I'm still learning. I'm not great at this. Mm-hmm. Appreciating who is going to be driven away by work that might feel like it's too much, like it's not what they're ready to do. On the flip side, there are ways, and this is what I'm quite passionate about this, to help people become comfortable with these processes.
Yes.
You know, take legislative advocacy, for example. You're describing the process that you described in trying to speak before the legislature sounds about, I mean, 10 times worse than knocking doors and getting a bad response that you might expect. And yet, there is a way to convince people, to show people that it is accessible.
And I think it's just getting people into that, into the door, I guess. I don't know. The system is built in such a way that it's a brick, it's a brick wall. Like, no one teaches you how to testify. No one taught me how to do it. I just did it. I don't know. I asked someone to show me around where the Capitol's at. How do I fill out this form? What am I doing? And they did that. And I think if you find a group of an ally in another group, you know, like a LGBTQ plus group, a repro group, something, they'll be like, yeah, I'd love some help. Follow me around for the day. This is how you do this. And once you do it, it's like, oh, this is easy. Mm. And I think it's just getting people into that door. So like if there's a lobby days being hosted by, I don't know, another progressive group, go to it. Just go to it. And they'll show you everything. You're going to meet with legislators, good and bad. You're going to go to meetings. You're going to go to committees. You're going to see what it's like. And you don't have to do anything. You can just observe. But it's a great intro to the process. And I feel like once people are introed to it, it's like, you found your home.
And that is precisely the experience that I've had by sending canvassers out, maybe with a partner who's done it more often. They realize, oh my God, every conversation we had was a good one. You know, yeah, sure. Some people heard that, you know, you are supporting a candidate they know they don't like, or you're with a party they know they don't like, or God forbid, you are a, no pun intended. Actually, let's intend that pun. You're an atheist. You know, and whatever, they didn't talk to you, but people generally are not that confrontational.
No.
And so people have a wonderful experience and then they're addicted just because they tried it. So having a mechanism for training or bringing people in is so valuable.
It really is. It really is. Getting through the first door, I guess, is all you need to do. And then once you're in, you're part of the club.
Will, what's your most effective method of integrating new people who are maybe resistant to the work or nervous about the work?
You just acknowledge how unnatural it is, how it's hard. Before I did my first door knocking, I was really nervous. I mean, I'm kind of too old to be this nervous, but I don't like being an inconvenience. I'm going knocking on these people's doors. They're having a nice Saturday, and here I am just interrupting their day. I just don't like doing that. But I was taught that this is one of the most potent things that you can do to get people to get out the vote and educate people on, oh, there's a runoff election. What? This is the most potent thing that you can do. So it was worth it to me to do it. And then once I did it, that was cool.
Yeah.
That was fun. And
it's fulfilling.
Absolutely. You realize how much it helps, how much you're helping democracy at the local level. You're a really cool blade of grass in this grassroots thing that you're a part of. It's very fulfilling.
It's a lovely way to say it.
Yeah.
I love
a lot of
that.
Good analogies.
Lovely.
Like death of rattle of the Christian right.
Oh, yeah.
Taking away a lot of this.
I like to think of when we talk about Congress people, like when you're testifying and people might be nervous about it. I try to think of, like, I know that Bennett had introduced I love to call the Senate that I don't like the treason weasels, because the reason that they are treason weasels is because they all actively voted to discount every single voter in PA in 2020. They did not want our votes to count. So yes, they are treason weasels and they will forever be named as that.
You'll hear no objection in this room, I suspect.
I call them Congress critters. And I call them that because I think that just makes it easier to be like, oh, you don't have to be so nervous around them. You know, it's not like you envision an audience naked. It's just like, no, they're just little Congress critters. They just run around and scurry around the Capitol all day.
They're not smart people. Like, I mean, you have this vision in your mind like, oh, they're in the... They have their folders and their.
I think Marjorie Taylor Greene did a lot of good to help us understand.
She helped us in that respect.
That but they are not necessarily smart at all.
They're everyday Joes who just, I'm going to run for an election. And they won and they're there now. So now they sit above you on the dais. And it's just like,
yeah,
they're no better than anyone else. And they're stupid as hell.
So we took a poll at the beginning of this in the Whova app, and we were asking people what they thought the most important measure of grassroots activism was. And it is great, Will, to hear what you say. And David, I know you are both avid door knockers. It scares me a little bit I get it. I get the fear. Mm-hmm. But I want to tell you the results of the poll. The majority of people agreed with canvassing. Canvassing, door-to-door knocking, contacting a voter, touching a voter, doing anything you can to touch them. Oh, yeah. Reach out and touch someone. Yeah.
An impression.
Consensual only, please.
Consensually pass them the endorsed candidate ballot from the Secular Houston organization. And then the number two top of the poll was to have a rally outside of an extremist candidate's office. We do this often in my district because my district
got an extremist state rep.
Yeah, we are the only in Delco represent Wooder. That's what it is. Yep. Proud. All right. In Delco, all of the state reps are Democratic except for one, and that is the one that lives in my district. Mm-hmm. So we often will have rallies outside of their very public-facing office with big signs. Just the other day, he said there was a ghost gun bill that was passed on the ballot in Pennsylvania, and he voted. Yeah, you know, he was like, "Oh no, ghost guns are fine. I have no problem with that." So we're there standing. Make sure people know what your representatives are doing. Mm. If you can do anything, keep that front of face, especially when you've got those treason weasels or those people that are just less than above.
And he's a particular weasel. This is a guy who won his first election in 2020, and is also sometimes, when it suits him, a 2020 election denier. Mm-hmm. So wrap your head around that one.
Oh,
he won this election, but it was also rigged. So should we throw you out, please?
Only the bottom of the ballot counted.
They're exempt, I guess.
The top of the ballot was impacted by George Soros space lasers. Mm. Yeah.
So. Thank you for clarifying.
Yeah. Shame is a powerful tool. I don't want to ever put, you know, shame people like my kids. It's, you know, it's bad. But for politicians, I think shame is a powerful tool that can be used to our advantage.
Yeah. So after rallying, what were our responses?
Phone banking and texting.
Whoa.
So yeah, that's also hard. Sometimes gets ignored, but phone banking and texting. I think phone banking and texting can make the biggest impact when you're reaching people when they have their ballot. So if you're using that to do a ballot chase with mail-in ballots, reminder to send in your ballot. We know you've gotten one. Here are the endorsed candidates. I think giving them information rather than just saying, "Hey, would you please," is a lot better from
via phone or text. I got another softball question. How many of you have been persuaded politically by a phone call or a text message? Right.
Okay. There are no hands going up in the room. It's like, please stop asking me if I want a new car warranty. I do not need
subscribe.
Yeah.
Spam.
And then
very last one was, trolling your extremist candidates online, right? Now, there was one vote for that, and I thank you.
We got some help with that one.
I'm going to say that is not the most impactful, but if you are fortunate enough to have a very heavy online presence, if a lot of people follow you online and you can troll someone online to the point where they block you, take that as a badge of pride and post that every time they post. Mm-hmm. So for example, Mastriano has blocked me and Scott Pressler has blocked me. He's the right-wing voting activist.
Right. And Mastriano was our gubernatorial candidate in 2022.
Yeah.
All but a self-avowed Christian nationalist. He gets followed around by New Apostolic Reformation apostles. Psycho.
Yeah. He has a prophet. He has his very own prophet. So.
Well, we're this is turning a little dark as we talk about Doug Mastriano, but I thought I might ask, we feel internally that we might be living in a moment for secular identity because the religious right has massively overplayed their hand. Mm-hmm. It's what gives me hope about our elections. You know, we see these positive elections trends in spite of the polls, largely, and I say this as the head of a Democratic capital D organization, that I have very little faith in my party, but a great deal of faith in how screwed up the other one is and how Christian nationalism has actually entered the mainstream discourse. I mean, Mike Johnson now flies an Appeal to Heaven flag outside of his office, which is a religious extremist symbol. We feel that perhaps this could be that moment, that opportunity for the secular community to rise and identify ourselves as an alternative. Do you share that optimism?
Absolutely. I love the spotlight being put on Christian nationalism because they thrive in the shadows, like cockroaches. I just kind of put it in those terms. And they've been in the shadows for, people say, oh, 2-3 years. It's been since the 80s, really. Yep. So now that there's a spotlight being shown on them, yeah, they're pretty powerful. They have power, but they're losing that. They know that their end is coming. They're obsolescence. So they lash out. But putting a spotlight on them, I think, really does help, because you're right. I've been seeing the word Christian nationalism on mainstream media. So more normies, I call them, just regular people, mm-hmm. kind of say, well, Christian nationalism, what is that? It's like a thing now. Mm-hmm. And way more than I ever thought would be out there. And it happened fairly quickly over the last 3-4 months. It's been great to see. Yeah, Mike Johnson really
Mike
did.
Mike Johnson was
the catalyst to all that. I love to see it because that makes our job easier. And Secular Houston actually put on a interfaith event around that movie, God and Country, which is mm-hmm. kind of the one that Rob Reiner produced.
It's really
and it just puts a bright spotlight on Christian nationalism and what it is. And I had a big interfaith event. UU people came, interfaith ministries, people came, the seculars came, and we had a post movie panel discussion about it. It was me, it was Americans United chapter, and a UU pastor. And so it was like a Q&A. It was terrific. So I'm doing what I can to educate people in Houston about Christian nationalism, why it's so bad, and what we can do together to push back on it.
Yeah. And I think the extremists are becoming more extreme. They kind of have to, in order to steal the spotlight and to get the rile up their folks. And I think when that starts happening, the people who were kind of on the line, like, yeah, you know what, I don't like abortion, blah, 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 whatever. But then they see, like, oh, those are the people that are representing me. Like, I think that maybe people who are raped should be able to have an abortion. It's like they're kind of outing themselves and showing us who they really are. And that scares the people who may have not had an opinion before or just were not quite out. But so, yeah, I think we are having a moment, and I hope that moment continues without any more people dying. But that would be ideal.
It'd be nice if it didn't come to all of that.
Yeah. No, insurrection, whatever.
Well, we can take some pleasure in Alabama. They had a special election on Tuesday, and Marilyn Lands, Marilyn Lands ran in 2022, and she lost by 7 points.
Oh.
She ran this time solely focused on bodily autonomy after the decision that came out mm-hmm. about IVF.
Yep.
And she ran, and she won by somewhere between, I've heard 25 points, and I've heard up to 33 points. Either way, that margin is just so huge. Now, this is a special
percentage
election.
Percentage differential. Yeah. That is
in Alabama. Alabama. So mm-hmm. I know that you both have said earlier that there is that you don't see your states flipping,
mm-hmm.
but I am going to be optimistic. Mm-hmm. Throughout, I don't want to put my head in the sand optimistic. I am going to do all the fucking work that I can mm-hmm. to make every little bit of that needle move mm-hmm. in every state. And I think if we all do that, then we have a pretty decent chance of mm-hmm. being able to overcome mm-hmm. the dominionism that I see as this grave threat. I know it's Christian nationalism, what are they saying now? Christian nationalism doesn't exist, because the minute we take a word, mm-hmm. they try to, it gets twisted. Yeah. So mm-hmm. I try to remind people that the whole idea is that they want to have dominion over you. Mm-hmm. So if their religion, any religion, is talking about this dominion, that is a threat on your freedom.
Mm-hmm.
Just
yep.
be aware. Shut it out. Don't let it happen.
Well, and I think it is so profound that we've all been discussing now this long game, because mm-hmm. I think for folks who live in either states like yours or districts like so many of the districts in, say, central Pennsylvania. I mean, Pennsylvania is solidly purple, and it's because we've got Philadelphia and Pittsburgh, and everything in between is almost everything is deep red. Oftentimes, I drive through the center of this state looking at the Confederate flags and Trump signs, and I'm thinking, you know, if there was just one good organizer or a handful of organizers here going door to door, destigmatizing progressive ideology, non-belief, over time, certainly not anytime soon, but over time, seismic change would happen. And that's a lot of what we're seeing when we see some of these, oh, wow, we had had an election in Alabama that flipped with a 25 to 30 point lead. That's unheard of, but it's going to keep happening as long as folks are organizing, and more folks, some optimism for you, are organizing in light of what's happening on the religious right. You know, they see these fundamental threats to their freedoms. So if anyone is to take anything away from our conversation today, I want it to be that you can start to make change wherever you are in life, whatever you do. You don't indeed need a medical degree, but it's wonderful to hear that that in spite of the crazy schedules and professional lives that you lead, that you're able to do this kind of work. So this is sort of a vague prompt, what would be your advice to somebody looking to break in, to do more than not just voting, not just occasionally showing up to a rally and knocking a door here or there? I was an activist my whole life, but I was just a foot soldier. I was until 2016, like so many people. I was a foot soldier. I'd knock doors, but I just followed instructions. Mm-hmm. I didn't make decisions. I didn't learn how the sausage was made. I didn't get involved in leadership. How would somebody looking to break in start to do the kinds of things that you two have done?
Dabble. Find. Because I didn't think I was going to like this stuff. I had no idea. So just find your topic, find what area you're interested in, and kind of figure out what to do with that. Like, so you like abortion, you want to talk about abortion, you know, go to your Planned Parenthood, go see what they do, go talk to their policy person and see if you can follow them around the Capitol, go knock on doors for a ballot initiative like we had in Florida, something like that. Just kind of dabble in, like, and then find what interests you and what your passion is and go from there. But I do think you just take that first step. You just got to take the first step is all you have to do.
I agree 100%. I tell that exact line to people. Find your passion. Figure out what your passion is and put energy into that. So again, I just assume everyone votes, but you do the extra, whether it's, and if it's Reaper Rights, you... Planned Parenthood in your area has an endorsement list every election. And you see who's on that endorsement list. And maybe if you have the extra money, send them $5 a month or $20 or one time. You think, oh, that's five, or just send them $5 one time. You think, oh, that's nothing. But it is, because now they get one extra person donating to the campaign, and it makes them look good. And actually it helps them raise even more money. And I would say, if you want to, if you can, you pick a candidate, you send them money, and you send them an email saying, hey, I just sent you $5 because Planned Parenthood endorsed you, and that's very important to me, and I'm an atheist or something. And that way now their office will note that in their notes, and now they know there's someone that supports them that's an atheist, and you give atheism a voice in your local government. So that's just the little extra steps you can take. Now, it may not be Reaper Rights. Again, we have a list of 20 things that we want to get to improve in society. Figure out what your passion is. If no one's around that can point you in the right direction, contact me. Contact American Atheist, and we can point you in the right direction wherever you are in the country.
Well, and you beat me to my next point, which is going to be to have each of you explain how anyone listening or anyone here today can engage with your work, the work that you're doing either with American Atheists or on the ground in your respective states. Best way to engage with your work, participate, donate, whatever you need.
I mean, money's always good. No, but I guess just email us would be the best way to get in contact with us. I think we both are on the Hellscape, formerly known as Twitter. Have you been on Twitter much lately?
A little bit. It's a little bit. It is a hellscape.
It's a hellscape.
Dumpster fire.
But I mean, you can interact with us on there. I'm DLG PhD, and you are, I forgot, Willie.
I think Willie Will 33, which I.
Oh, I mean, that's not the best way to engage with you then.
Yeah, no, not.
If you're not sure.
Yeah, Twitter. You can find us on the American Atheist website. Our emails are up there. We're easy to get hold of, and we'll help you out.
Yeah. my group, Secular Houston, is on all the social medias, but we don't really deal with money and we're more local. Mm-hmm. So I would say contact American Atheist. They'll figure out who in your area is worth your money or your energy, your time. Mm-hmm. And you can put energy through there. And if you can't, if they can't help you, contact me. I'll do my own work and try to plug you in to where you can put that energy.
We'll give you all our secret knowledge.
Yeah, I want to, whatever, any success I'm having in Houston, I want to write it down, make a template and replicate it around town so that now there are around the country, so that now there's a secular Memphis or a secular Santa Fe, so that you can, it's going to be different in every city, but I absolutely do want to replicate this.
Well, we can't thank you enough for joining us for this discussion today. Devin, Will, it's been an absolute pleasure to chat with you. Please, round of applause for our amazing guests. For your wisdom about your states and for the work that you're doing with American Atheists. If you enjoyed our discussion, I encourage all of you please to subscribe to the Unreasonable Podcast wherever you get your podcasts. If you want to go another step further, we have a Patreon account that's linked to our website, podcastunreasonable.com. For $5 a month, you make a huge impact on the work that we do. I'd like to thank my amazing co-host, Christina Iacono. My amazing, our amazing executive producer, Bennett Windheim, our audio producer, Glenn Yanaro, our audio production assistant, Sam Levine. Woo! Big thanks again to American Atheist for hosting us. Again, I've been your host, David Brown. Let's stay vigilant, active, and let's all be reasonable. Thank you so much. Thanks for checking out our conversation with Drs. Devin Graham and Will Judy. Let me remind you that secular advocacy does not require a PhD or MD. But perhaps hearing from working medical doctors is a good lesson that nobody is too busy to play a role in this movement. If you're so strapped for time that you can commit just one action to the fight for church-state separation, consider helping us continue to produce our show by supporting us on Patreon for as little as $5 a month. Trust me, your support may seem like too little, or conversely, just another annoying subscription drawing from your bank account every month. But to us, your contribution is huge. It's all additive, the very definition of grassroots power. Exercise that power. Help us empower the movement to preserve our pluralistic democracy. Visit our website, podcastunreasonable.com, to find a link to our Patreon page. Meanwhile, follow us on the platform formerly known as Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and Threads. Like us, love us, write glowing reviews on our podcast page, reach out to us, and most importantly, if you like what we're doing, please tell your friends. Help us build this network. I'm your host, David Brown, joined by my co-host, Christina Iacono. Our executive producer is Bennett Windheim. Our audio producer is Glenn Yanaro. Our theme music is my own composition with me playing violins, viola, and cello, and that's my mom, Jody Brown, on piano. On behalf of our whole team, stay vigilant, stay active, and let's be reasonable.